Hello, and welcome to Convergently Speaking. Today we have a couples matchup interview with Kyle and Laura Friesen, ENFP and ISTP. Hi there, I'm Caitlin Anir with a brief intro before the interview. So this conversation is the first in a series that we're going to do, interspersed in between our other episodes, and we're planning to have different couples on, people who know their personality types and have particularly used that knowledge in their relationship and in their life for growth and for understanding. And we want to have these conversations for two reasons. Number one, because it's really valuable to hear about how other couples have navigated challenges in their own lives. And if you're listening to the particular episode, because the matchup of the couple's personality types is similar to your own, you'll see some of yourself in what you hear them talk about, and you'll have some understanding of the relationship dynamics that are at play, which otherwise may have been baffling and frustrating. And secondly, we want these interviews to be a vehicle to dive more into some of the technical aspects of the Myers-Briggs system and to explain some of it beyond just the basic sort of pop psych ideas of introvert and extrovert. We've done that a little bit in other episodes, but we really have that intention with these to dive into the system a little bit more and explain the deeper levels of what's going on in an actual relationship context, not just conceptually teaching about Myers-Briggs, but showing a real life example within this relationship that we're talking about. So in the interview you're about to hear, we have Kyle, who is an ENFP, so extrovert, intuitive, feeler, perceiver, and Laura, his wife, is an ISTP, so introvert, sensor, thinker, perceiver. So those four letters, they're like the 101, the basics of the system. But to go one layer deeper, what they actually point to is what we call our cognitive functions, so the different ways that our brains work. In the Myers-Briggs system, altogether, there are 8 cognitive functions that exist, and each personality type has 4 that they mainly use. And for each different personality type, those 4 top functions are arranged in a hierarchy of how much we use them and how sophisticated they are. So sometimes we call that hierarchy your cognitive function stack. In the conversation with Kyle and Laura, you'll hear us referring to the dominant, so the first in the hierarchy or stack, then the auxiliary or the second one, the tertiary, the third one, and the inferior is the fourth one. That hierarchy is different for each personality type. And then also, to make it nice and confusing, you'll also hear some metaphorical language thrown around, words like driver and co-pilot. So Dan and Kyle both learned to do their personality profiling through Personality Hacker. And they use this metaphor of your cognitive functions being like the passengers in a car. Your first one is the driver, the second one is the co-pilot, and then the third and fourth are like kids in the back seat. So that's a way of thinking about how sophisticated each one is and how it plays out in your personality type. And I think Kyle also refers to the fourth one as a baby. So that's sort of just a metaphor of how sophisticated that last function is. It's not very sophisticated. You'll hear us using all of that language a little bit interchangeably. Hopefully you can follow along. So to lay out some basics before we start, Kyle is an ENFP. So that means that his hierarchy or stack is first extroverted intuition, second, introverted feeling, third, extroverted thinking, and fourth, introverted sensing. So let's expand just on those first two a little bit. So what we might call his driver and co-pilot. So intuition in general, and specifically extroverted intuition, likes to look at all the possibilities. So they find connections between different concepts, concepts that other people may see no connection to, and they get really excited about new and different possibilities and ideas. People with extroverted intuition can see the big picture really clearly, and they love anything new and different. They don't like being in a rut or routine, and they don't really like getting into the nitty-gritty details. They like looking big picture and at all the possibilities. And then Kyle's second function is introverted feeling. In Myers-Briggs, anytime we see a thinking or feeling function, Those functions are how we make our decisions. So someone using introverted feeling, they mostly focus on the data points of emotions and values. And since it's introverted rather than extroverted, it's about their own feelings and values. It's an internal decision-making process. You'll hear Kyle talk about how this plays out in his life. Generally, for people with introverted feeling, they have very, very deep convictions and internal values that they live their life by. And that is sort of the rudder that guides them. And they'll have a really hard time if they can't line up their life with what their internal values are. Now let's talk about Laura's type. Laura is an ISTP. So her function stack is first, introverted thinking, then second, extroverted sensing, third is introverted intuition, and last is extroverted feeling. So first, her introverted thinking function. Like Kyle's introverted feeling, introverted thinking is a decision-making process that's internal, but Laura's going to be more concerned about data points and logic rather than the emotion or values involved. They can take emotion and values into that equation when they're doing their internal logic, but it's only one of the data points that they use, whereas with the feeling function, that's the main data point that they use.
People with introverted thinking are very intelligent. They're very good at thinking things through and really getting down to the details and the core of any logical problem that they're puzzling out. And because they spend most of their time in that logical and internal space, social situations and social cues aren't their focus and aren't their strength. So that's Laura's first function. Her second function is extroverted sensing, which is all about being in the moment and taking in all of the real-world, tangible information that they can. People with extroverted sensing, they love new and different real-world experiences. They may be very good at sports and have good reflexes, and they can see and understand all the ins and outs of the real, tangible world. So I think that's enough information for the top. It should give you a baseline of understanding as you listen through this conversation to some of those more technical topics that we're talking about. So now we'll hand it over to Kyle and Laura Friesen.
All right. Well, welcome everyone to the podcast today. I'm really excited that we've got our first interview with a couple where we're basically going to start diving into personality and firsthand experiences from Kyle and Laura. So I met Kyle a few years ago when I was studying with Personality Hacker doing my profiler training program. And we've had a friendship for a few years now. And so he knows type really well and also type really well as well, presumably partly from having to, don't take this personally, Kyle, listen to Kyle a lot because he like me, likes to bang on about personality type a lot. I know he will. So yeah, so I've had a friendship with him for a while and really enjoyed watching him learn and grow and develop. He also works with couples using type as his primary to help them, and combined they're actually working as a couple. But I think give a better explanation about your projects and what you're moving towards in the future. And then we'll jump into a few questions around personality type and how you guys have found it helpful.
Sure. So yeah, thanks for having us. We're really excited to have a couple-to-couple conversation. That doesn't happen actually a whole lot. But yeah, both of us are really deep into the world of cognitive functions and type. And using our combined skill sets, we've created a company called Friesen Holistic Wellness. And we do actually have some joint clients. Most of my clients are international and Laura's are local, but we have one or two that we actually can see together. So I do coaching using personality types. So I profile clients, have a conversation with them, dig deep, and then we get into coaching mode. And my favorite clients are couples. I like all my clients, but when I can do a couple together, then after I profiled both of them individually, then I put together what I call an SCT report, or it's synergies, challenges, and triggers, just looking at how all of the cognitive functions play with each other as you have a relationship and how that comes up. So there's so many good things and then hard things and then things that we just get instinctively triggered by each other. And it's helpful to put language around that. And so that's kind of my side. And I'll let Laura talk about her specialty, which is a little bit more physical and sensory.
Right. So I am trained as an Anat Benil method neuromovement practitioner. That sounds like a lot, and people aren't usually familiar with what is neuromovement. So I'm looking at the brain through more of exactly a sensory and movement lens. And so I use slow, gentle movement with my clients to help their brain reorganize and learn new patterns and learn new skills to bring health to themselves. And so my clients, it could be, you know, somebody who's had an injury or chronic pain or something like physical like that, or it could be neurological, so stroke or MS, Parkinson's, kind of that thing. But really, every person has a brain and everybody could learn to use our brains more efficiently or in better ways. But I've really noticed even personality type and cognitive functions plays a role in this, and how to work with my clients or how to speak with them, help them understand, you know, the changes that are happening or the learning that is happening. And yeah, like Kyle said, we do have a few joint clients. And so it's been very fascinating to see how together we can address physical health, you know, mental health and brain plasticity in different ways. It's been very fascinating.
Yeah, we kind of help people from both ends. So my work is, of course, primarily verbal, and hers is somatic, so through the movement side. And our brains, some things you can only access through one of those channels. So we feel kind of, it seems like a really cool thing to be able to hit it together as a couple, bringing our own strengths to it. And yeah, it's been quite the adventure to slowly make this a reality. And in the future, we hope to incorporate like a retreat center idea where we have a property out on Vancouver Island and we're building out there. And the long-term goal is to have a retreat there so people could come, whether it's primarily Laura's clients, if you have special needs or you want an intense weekend of neuromovement, and then in between, you can also, as a family unit, whatever that may be, come together and work on the relational side at the same time. Or if I have clients that suddenly it's like, oh, like you need to address your physical health too and grow that way. So yeah, there's some neat opportunities and that's slowly forming. And so we'll see where that takes us.
That's really interesting. And I'm not sure, Kyle, if I've ever mentioned to you, but isn't it fascinating? I don't know if you're thinking what I am, Caitlin, but Caitlin, do you want to say a couple of comments about what you've been doing and studying recently? Mm-hmm. Just to go off track a little, just to see the similarity.
Yes. Yeah, I know a lot between us and you guys, and we'll get into the technical side of the Myers-Briggs and why that talking. So I've been getting into with a modality called TRE, which is trauma release exercises. So also a somatic thing, and that your tension and your emotions can get trapped in the body. And then it's a way to, you know, move that through and connect with that and become embodied, become more grounded. So I'm just getting that. I've all in, and then I'm also planning to go into more body. Yeah, so that is really interesting because both Kyle and Dan are intuitives in the Myers-Briggs system. So that just helping in maybe sort of the more head type of realm, obviously bringing that also. And then Laura and I are both sensors, so we're more in the practical and more in the body. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense that
and what's interesting about both of our modalities, I suppose you could call it, though that's not quite the right word, I'm not sure, but is that for both Laura and I, we are going away, like we're not so much with a fixing mindset. So a lot of healthcare or even counseling is so focused on fixing problems for people coming in as a superhero and saving the day and both of us are actually more in the coaching mode. So when Laura was a physiotherapist, it was more all of the training was geared towards fixing issues. You have a diagnosis, a problem, and we solve that problem for you, and then you're on your way. What happens now with her work is it almost doesn't matter what the diagnosis is in terms of the work, because the first thing she does when she sees a client is observes what does this body do right now? How is it moving? What does this brain know about, like, can the clavicles and the ribs move independently of each other? Is the lower back all locked up, or does, you know, so it's this observational, what's happening? And then as she moves the body gently and makes connection, it's really connecting with the brain directly and seeing and introducing a little new possibility here and a new potential there. And it almost trains the brain from scratch, seeing what is and then opening up potentials. And then I'm doing kind of the same thing with my coaching. So when I'm talking to a client, it'll be like, hey, have you noticed this? And maybe the two of you could work together in this way, or maybe this is what's going on. So just introducing possibilities, but then the client's still actually, it's up to their brains to now take that information and do it. So we would view ourselves more as coaches and mentors rather than superheroes swooping in to save victims from themselves. Right. So it's just cool how both of our approaches have that ground mindset, like a more holistic approach and a more healthy, empowering approach too, I would say.
Start again. So I want to throw a question at you guys. It'd be great to hear both of you in terms of what is something that you wish you knew about type or your particular type, invaluable to know when you first, you know, you've since.
There's a lot of things that every couple kind of figures out on our own if we stay together long enough, right? We've been married for over 20 years now, and we were dating for a couple of years before that. And so along the way, there are some things that we just kind of figured out. There's the more shallow, like introvert, extrovert dynamics. So realizing that I need to have a lot more time than Laura does with other people and engaging outside of the home, I guess. So I've always spent a lot of time out there. And it didn't take long into marriage before you just realized, hey, Kyle needs to do some stuff by himself with other people while you stay at home and get some recharging done.
I think that goes for all couples or people in a relationship who have an introverted extrovert. So yeah, I fully agree with that. And we've, I think, come up with a pretty decent balance to make sure that we each get what we need, our introverted and extroverted times. I think there's a tendency for everyone to kind of think that the person beside you is going to see the world in the same way that you do. It makes sense if you think about it that not everybody's going to see the world through the same lenses as you. But you kind of think that, well, don't most people have the same thought processes or see things through the same lens? And so I think early on in our marriage, we'd be trying to figure out a problem, or we have a dream, or, you know, we want to do a project. We want to do some yard design or something like that, right? And Kyle's saying one thing and I'm saying one thing, and the communication's just not quite meshing. And
so let's get real concrete. I wanted to build a root cellar in our backyard. And so I got these books from my grandma, and I'm talking about all of these ways we could do it. And Laura's starting to panic. It's like, but how are we going to dig? What in the world is going on? Because not realizing that I have to brainstorm first. And when I'm tossing out ideas, like, I'm going to be throwing out about 75% of what I talk about. Whereas with an ISTP and most introverts, you don't really show your work before. They'll start talking about it once they have a very clear, crystallized idea, and it's pretty much at least ready to go. Whereas I'm just like, hey, tossing out, why don't we talk about this? And she's like, how am I supposed to equip you to do this? And where is this coming from? So what we figured out, she was like, you need to go outside with me and show me exactly where this is even possible. So we walked outside and I paced out things and like, okay, we could do it right here. And we walked the perimeter and it's like, well, okay, well, this tree has to go. Then we have to do X, Y, and Z to try to get it all going. In the end, we never built a root cellar, incidentally, on that property. But a few years later, when we built another house, then we integrated a root cellar into the design. So from my perspective, having that brainstorming time was very useful, even though in the end we decided, no, this is a bad idea for right now in this context. I'm always going to use it someday in the future. So for me, when I'm throwing out 70% of the things that I say, it can seem wasteful if you have a very limited context. But for the context of my entire life, you know, that's all very useful. And I never know what am I going to suddenly draw on and use someday. But yeah, that was kind of a disconnect at first. So she was thinking, oh, Kyle wants to do this. And how, as a supportive partner, can I help him achieve this? And she was like way ahead of where I was at. Whereas like I was still in the phase of, is this even a good idea? But I didn't say that directly. I was just spewing out ideas.
And yeah, that's one of those things where that seems obvious to you that, oh, of course you'd brainstorm and throw things at the wall. Of course, I don't really mean it. So how now going forward, has there been other situations that, you know, where maybe Kyle, you get an idea and start on things, where how have you been able to use that, like that pre-knowledge, so that when you start new projects, there's not that initial sort of like bit of tension or whatever?
Yeah, I think for me, what I always appreciated about Laura from the beginning was exactly her willingness to be direct with me. So this is something I love about Extroverted Sensing and her co-pilot, is that she didn't just suffer in silence. It was like, no, I don't understand. Like, you need to tell me exactly what's going on here. And so she's always kind of done that. And so over time, I've just learned maybe I need to do some of my really early brainstorming with a group of other people that aren't involved in this. And so then I'm not putting extra pressure. Like, when I start talking about ideas, it puts her into her tertiary introverted intuition function. And she's like figuring out the pathway of how is this going to play out? How is this even going to work out? And that's not as solid of a place. It's not as sophisticated as her extroverted sensing. So when we're talking about new ideas or projects and things like that, it's just super helpful. First of all, for me to have a clear idea of what's going on, like physically, tangibly, not just a conceptual words thing, but like, hey, we can walk out here and see it and we can touch these trees and move these rocks. Or even when we're talking about things, we're going to go on a walk together now and do it while she's engaging her body too. Or if I'm having a really intuitive conversation with friends, she's getting some handiwork done. I don't know, what do you do, doing the dishes or something while we talk? Just to engage the body to keep your introverted intuition from like getting too detethered from reality.
We also have some of our best intuitive conversations, yet like Kyle said, either when we go for a walk or if we're driving like a longer distance, and I tend to drive, and then he can just talk. And I can actually engage in it, because even just the act of driving, just that little bit of act of something physical, tangible, allows me. And then, honestly, we're also locked into a car. So like, what else are you going to do? So we might as well have that intuitive conversation, right? Where there's not anything else asking for my attention, because sometimes, you know, he may want to, but around the house, and all of a sudden I'm getting distracted by, I don't know, dirty dishes. Now I'll...
You need to do this thing right now, and then you're not even thinking about the conversation
anymore. And then
I'm not
thinking about the conversation anymore. So,
meanwhile, if I'm driving and talking, then I'm missing turnoffs, and I'm confined in my head. I'm on autopilot, and that's not a good thing. But with you, it actually enhances your intuitive side, because your brain, Personality Hacker talks about hypnotizing the opposite function to get into it a little bit more. And that's kind of what's going on. It just, then you're in a place of comfort and sophistication. That part of your brain is at least being fed. And then it takes the pressure off. Like, you're not just in the part of your brain that maybe doesn't have as much sophistication, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's such a great example. One of the biggest turning points for me when I learned that I was an intuitive and also what sensing meant and what it meant I wasn't and so on and so forth was that I had one particular friend, a very old friend, who we became friends because of shared experiences, not because we're really similar at all. Mm. He's more like a brother. And I realized that for years I'd been trying to strong arm him into having these intuitive conversations. And I could see his eyes glaze over in literally minutes. Like he's an ESFP. Yeah. And so one of the biggest hacks, it's so similar to you guys, and I love hearing about the driving thing, was when we were in Australia, I owned a tandem bike.
Ooh.
And so we'd go for a ride on the tandem bike, but I'd let him control the steering and do the gears and do the braking. And I'd literally just sit at the back and pedal. And so it's exactly what you're saying with you, Kyle, sitting in the passenger seat. And it made for brilliant conversations, far better than it would have been had I just taken him for a drink at a cafe, because he was like properly working his body and having a little more engagement with all the controls. And I've never heard anyone else give a similar example, but that's exactly what you're saying. It's like hypnotizing that fourth function. So for me, my fourth function being extroverted sensing, and for him, his first function being extroverted sensing.
Yeah, and that's how we spend a lot of time enjoying each other's presence. It's like both exploring new things, even though we don't share any cognitive functions in our cognitive function stack. There are still enough in common between extroverted intuition and extroverted sensing, and introverted thinking and introverted feeling have a lot of things in common. Introverted thinking, introverted feeling both really care about everybody having a mind of their own or making decisions for yourself, and you evaluate what is right and wrong, and we care about what's right and wrong. It's just that that's surface language stuff. When I'm talking about truth and beliefs, there is an element of ethics and impact, and emotions is unfortunately tied up in there too. I tried so hard to detach it, but it doesn't work. Whereas introverted thinking is a lot more universal. Even if you don't believe in universal truths, there still is an element of this truth is for the group. Introverted thinking and extroverted feeling working together. That's what it's kind of caring about. Whereas my truth is so pragmatic at times, like introverted feeling and extroverted thinking work together to find this ethical action, or we need to do something about all of these truths. Otherwise, what's the point? It doesn't really matter if this truth is just theoretical. So we use a lot of the same language, but then we're doing it for different reasons. Like there's a different focus. And so do we want to talk about incompetency right now? Maybe we should go there.
Incompetency. I have a harder time. I hold a lot of space for a lot of things and for a lot of people's thoughts. But yes, being competent is important.
Knowing how to do things the right way. We're first married. I think there was maybe times when I just decided to let you do things the way that made you happy, and then I just wouldn't do it. And I can't do the same thing twice. Every time I do laundry or do the dishes, it happens slightly different. Or cooking. Go ahead.
I wanted to hear Laura move one layer out of the polite Canadian into the ISTP, introverted thinking. Well, could I call it brutality? I mean, you're so lovely compared. I have a few good friends that are both that type. And yeah, the need for competence for the ISTP is real. I'd love to hear more. If there's a way of communicating that intensity or that dynamic in the relationship. Because I mean, when I work with couples, some of the hardest dynamics with couples is when they have those introverted decision-making functions in the front of their car. That's some of the, especially when it's number one.
So why don't we look at how your introverted thinking and extroverted sensing perceives my baby introverted sensing? Like how blissfully unaware I am of certain things, and that can be viewed as complete incompetence in certain things. There are things that I am absolutely incompetent in because it's not even on my radar and I don't care about them. So how have you perceived that in our relationship? No holds barred.
No. Well, I think I've just taken over doing a lot of things. Although, to be fair, we dealt with some major health issues for the majority of our marriage, really.
Yeah.
And
I had chronic Lyme for at least 10 years, and she had chronic Lyme as well for probably at least, what, 4 to 5? That played a role.
And so maybe, you know, using my cognitive functions of ISTP and just even my background in healthcare, you know, I was a physiotherapist until I was sick with chronic Lyme and I left that career behind. But yeah, I just kind of take over and I've tried making a list of like supplements and, you know, his medications that he's supposed to take. And then he tries to fill the things. And then all of a sudden I'm just like, but you're out. And he's like, yeah. He's like, can you just fill those for me? And so for good or for bad, I've just kind of taken over doing certain things. Or as a parent, it's been hard to, I either do it for my kids or I tell them what they need to do, but it's almost hard for me to teach them because it's just easier for me to do, right? And so it's like, okay, well, figure it out and do it. But yeah, there's just certain caregiving things, whatever, meals, laundry, but like medication, healthcare stuff that I've just taken all the, because Kyle's just like, I can't take the kids to the dentist. That is just not something that I am comfortable with. He's like, that's your world.
I hate teeth issues too. I have trauma from childhood about all my teeth having to
get pulled.
Anything
health related, so doctor,
my teeth
dentist,
never came out easy. That, so there's more going on that one.
but it sounds like it's care. You said caring issues. So it's caring issues, but in a really practical way for you.
Yeah.
From what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. And for me to really access a lot of the what would be considered pragmatic and regular life things, that's like my backseat. Those are my lower two functions. So introverted sensing and extroverted thinking. And the only way I can actually be reliable in, let's say, taking my medication, or which used to be super complex. Like, we're not talking one or two pills. It is complex. I can do, if it's all set out and I have a really good system in place and I do exactly the same thing every single day, I can remember to take my pills first thing in the morning 90% of the time, 90%, somewhere around there. As soon as it gets more complex than that, things just start getting dropped. Because again, this is my baby. I'm incompetent at anything introverted sensing. I can try super hard to put things in my life. But the problem is that she doesn't use those functions that I need to get there. So even things like making lists isn't really in her wheelhouse either.
It's not.
She does it as she sees it. She does things best when she can engage with the environment and see it. Excite. Now this needs to be done and I'm going to get her done. That's the extroverted sensing way. I really need to make my own lists. And that's really hard. That's difficult. So even though we don't share any cognitive functions, you think, oh, we'd be awesome at everything because between the two of us, we have all eight. Well, no, both of us still have these blind spots and we can cover a lot of areas of life, but then there are certain things that are just tough. And so even with, I homeschool the kids now because she's working more with the clients. I'm trying not to push my work too much because I want to spend more time with the kids. For me and my homeschooling approach, it's getting into the schedule. So Monday, Wednesday, Fridays is certain subjects, Tuesday, Thursday, like I really have to lock in on that. So even though it's all my baby stuff, it's simple enough, only four kids to deal with. So she tracks down the curriculum and does like the super administrative stuff. But then I really love the hands-on, what problem is going to happen today? And I can talk it through in any subject with any of my kids. I love that part. So we've kind of come to figure out a way to make it work for both of us. And then, you know, I don't mind dealing with the kids' emotions when they're having a bad math day. That's actually totally fine with me, whereas that was really, really hard when Laura was in charge of the homeschooling and I was working up. And so then she would do the bulk of it. And she was really good at certain aspects within. It's like, oh man, these kids and their emotions. Okay, fine. You're just not doing math today until you can get past this emotional thing that you need to take care of on your own. I mean, it's not that extreme, but maybe it felt that way. And so I don't know, not sure where we're going with all of this. Bring me back on track.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I wrote down your types and the cognitive functions just so I could like visualize it. And I went, oh, none are the same.
Nope.
And also even the fact that, Kyle, you have intuition and feeling as your top mm-hmm. ones, and Laura has sensing and thinking. So I think that's probably the most opposite you could be, huh? And I was thinking, in a lot of ways, you guys would catch all each other's blind spots, and mm-hmm. you have all of the different 8 cognitive functions represented between you. The grass is always greener, huh? I know Dan and I are always like, gosh, we're just too similar. We really need some extroverted thinking in here and everything would be wonderful. But then we have a lot of shared language. Like, we're both introverted judges. So we both like our routine. When we move across the world and everything's blown up, we're having the same experience of, gosh, this is intense, and mm-hmm. understanding that we're going through that together and that change is really hard, rather than one of us thinking, oh, this is all amazing and everything's new, and the other person getting left behind. We've talked about on the podcast before how if you're not speaking the same language and you're not understanding where the other person's coming from, those differences can just end up being grating or frustrating and challenging. But then once you can see it as the flip side of filling in your weaknesses and your blind spots, that can be really positive. So on that vein of you guys being so opposite, so what's your favorite thing about the other person's type that you feel adds to your life and to your relationship and family in a really cool way?
Yeah, I think I alluded to this earlier, but to put it more concretely, is Laura's always been the person that I can count on to ground me. So extroverted sensing and introverted thinking really tied to what actually is. What is reality? And then, like, make it clear and true, right? Even from when we started dating, like, I'm not super comfortable with social. What's the word? Like, not social cues. I can kind of pick up on social cues and emotional energy, but it's more like, oh, these social rules of how to navigate life, I've never been really good about it or cared so much about it. We met each other at a summer camp. We were both working there. And at the very end, after the campers had all left, we had gone on a walk together. And we had been kind of flirting the whole summer intermittently when we've had the chance. And so this was like our last day before we're going home. And on our way back from the walk, then Laura's like, so are we dating or what? Which is pretty brave, I have to say. Like, that's not the normal way of doing things. And we're like, oh, thank you so much for just asking me directly, because I don't know how to navigate this world. I'd never dated anybody before, and you're just asking me? Great. I kind of like you, and I think I'd like to try this out, right? But for her, people just say, okay, what is the reality of this situation right now? Let's cut right down to the heart of things. It's like, oh, that's so helpful. And it's a good reminder to me too, because I tend to over nuance everything or like think of 15,000 exceptions. At some point, you just need to know what is, right? And get to the heart of something. So she's always been that for me, my anchor, and kept me on the ground. But then it's also like my extroverted intuition needs so much to have sensory data, reliable data. It needs the introverted sensing data to work. It doesn't work if I have to connect something. If I'm not connecting real things, I'm not connecting anything. And so I value sensory concrete data and facts so much. And she loves researching facts like crazy. So if we're looking at something, I'll just let her research for a long time, because this is the other dynamic that's at play, is she needs to know all of the data before making a decision on something. Give me all of the data so that she can frame it up and like what truth points matter for this context. Like, that's her big picture, is what are all the facts? What's all true about this situation? And for me, it's like, I can't handle all of those facts. I don't really care about bus routes, you know, in the place that we're moving to, because we're only moving in 6 months from now. So you can research bus routes and I'll care about it and pay attention once I'm actually needing a bus, which is probably going to be never. But for you, that was super important. Where am I going with this? Anyways, I let her research and gather all the data because that's fun for her. And then she can bring the synthesized, like, what's actually important to me. Maybe now I finally need to know about a bus route. And you're like, oh, yeah, I researched this like 4 months ago, and it's this, this, and this. I'm like, oh, awesome. And now I can integrate that data and use it really quickly. So we work together in that way. too, which is awesome. The other thing is ISTPs really are awesome in zombie apocalypses, in things like COVID or, you know, chronic Lyme disease for 10 years. And there's just a way that the extroverted sensing and introverted thinking can figure things out in such a practical, real way. Like, I can figure out a lot of issues from a theoretical standpoint, or know how something fits, or figure out the whys of things. Or if I need to, I can put together a chair or something. I can make projects done. But it's just a different, way of doing it. Yeah. Do you want to say something now? I went on in my little ENFP rant. This is what happens to you. I hope you love that about me.
Well, do I have a choice to say?
See,
what I would say about the last 20 plus years with this ENFP, he has gotten me out of my comfort zone, right? Like, as an introvert, and then even that tertiary introverted intuition, which can, for me, very often go down the rabbit trail of thinking about the more negative what ifs of, like, okay, so if I do this, like, but like, what if this happens, or what if I get hurt, or like, I was a really good softball player when I was younger, and then when they introduced the concept that you needed to slide to steal a base, I dropped softball like a hot potato. I was like, are you kidding me? You cannot make me slide. I will not slide, and I'm gonna get hurt. And so, you know, sometimes that introverted intuition isn't so helpful. And, but then I have him, and he's like, here's my sister's rollerblades. They fit your feet. Let's go rollerblading. I've never been rollerblading. Well, let's go. The guy who doesn't have a lot of body awareness, but like somehow keeps me on my feet, you know, as I'm learning how to rollerblade, right?
I don't mind failing. That's my, that's the gift I give.
So he gave me the gift of, it's okay if you show some incompetence or as you're learning a new skill. And so there's been things that I never thought that I would ever do that I have. So that's a huge gift, right? Being able to help an introvert get out of their head or get out of their comfort zone and to try something. And then often trying that something is a really good thing. And you get to learn a new skill, or you get to learn, have a new experience. And so his willingness to try new ideas or just try something fun has been able to bring out my extroverted sensing. And even though we don't share any cognitive functions, twice we have built a brand new house and been able to landscape and bring this vision of whatever we needed in a house and yard at that time into beautiful projects. And something that I don't think that I could do on my own, or he could do on his own, or Freeze and Holistic Wellness and our vision and our dreams for moving forward as time goes on. It's just exciting, the potential, the possibilities out there.
I just wanted to ask about perpetual problems. You know, I'm hoping that people will tune into these type of podcasts to get some insights and behind the scenes stories and anecdotes about all the different matchups, this one being ENFP, ISTP. Are there perpetual problems that you guys have with your personality matchup? Things that are just kind of always going to be there by the nature of who you are and how your cognitive functions, because the idea is that we don't change type, we can evolve, grow and develop, but we're still fundamentally always going to be the same.
Yeah, so when I'm coaching clients, then one of the major sections is all about our tertiary functions. So what's interesting about in a relationship context, for all of us, pretty much without exception, unless you have trauma, that third function, when we're younger, we think we're really good at it and we want to show the world how awesome we are. Well, for me, that's extroverted thinking. And I tell you, I've gotten a lot of things done, a lot of projects accomplished, a lot of certifications and all sorts of different skills that I've developed over time. But that's easy when you're just on your own, right? When life is not complex, that third function works just fine, right? Whatever your dominant function wants to do, it's like, okay, tertiary, do your thing. When you add complexity to it, then suddenly all the leaks show. And so when we were dating, she thought I could do a whole lot more, like, and I could do a lot of things, but she didn't see all of the things that I struggled with, like making appointments for things or doing taxes. It's really, really, really hard. It shouldn't be, but it is somehow because I'm so good at these other things. And so we often, when we're dating, we look at the other person and they're showing us their awesome third function, because it's in a very simple way. And for her, it's the introverted intuition. So it's like, she can kind of anticipate what's going to happen and think about all of the things that could go wrong. So because I struggle with seeing all the things that could go wrong, or I don't want to admit them because my extroverted intuition sees all the awesome possibilities and I'll just be able to overcome anything. But it is actually handy to know in advance, maybe we should prepare a little bit. And so what happens is that we end up, for our specific combination, where she doesn't have extroverted thinking in her stack at all. Extroverted thinking is really important in this world to get anything done, and it's valued. So that means it all lands on me and my third function, which is a lot of pressure to put on an unsophisticated function. And so no matter what, it's gonna have to end up going there, or we have to go the roundabout way. Now, that's all a really abstract way of saying this. And when we were younger, then I thought I could take that on. Once you add four kids to the mix, suddenly it's complex to actually get some things accomplished. And especially with the chronic Lyme, forget about it. That wiped out my extroverted thinking entirely. I couldn't do stuff, which is a major ego hit and a major lifestyle hit. And so there is this element of my extroverted intuition had to get more realistic on what I could accomplish and reduce the amount of things that I actually did. There's one point in life where I was busy on committees and performances and going out 16 nights a month. So on average, more than every other day. Wasn't healthy. We had little kids at the time. And I just realized, you know what? This isn't sustainable. I can't do this anymore. I'm dropping the ball in the relationship side of things. So I had to reduce the responsibilities that my extroverted thinking had in the outside world and just use that to help my family first. So I had to reduce the complexity of all of the different things that I was accomplishing in life. That was very helpful for our relationship, I think, just reducing that. But yeah, seeing that dynamic at play, relying on each other's third function, that's been something that will continue. Like, somebody has to anticipate what's going to happen. And so as much as Laura said earlier, that introverted intuition tends to be more holding back, it's draining for her to be there. And yet she still has to be in that draining spot. So we both are taking a hit. We have to be in our tertiary function enough just because we need those things to exist in our world. So no matter what, there's going to be something like that in every relationship, whether it's a shared blind spot or just a shared weakness. Somebody's actually going to have to take charge when you don't really want to anymore. It's not always fun. Yeah. So that means sometimes I do have to set up my own schedule or set up. So for the kids, I've set up a schedule because I'm actually the most equipped, even though that's my third and fourth functions working together to set up a schedule. That's still easier for me than it is for her. And that's hard to realize it. Like, well, can't you just do stuff? No, it's not going to happen then.
Yeah, well, the language of perpetual problems is literally from the Gottman Institute. And the Gottman method is one of the primary methods that couples therapists use. And so it's a frame that I use. It's like, there's solvable problems and there's perpetual problems. And so, yeah, that's where my head is at. It's like, what are the perpetual problems of an ENFP that's in a relationship with an ISTP?
Yeah, so our house will never be like spotless and like a model home for everyone to drop in at a moment's notice. We have a lot of chaos in our life, right? And we're okay with that for the most part.
One thing I'm kind of feeling a little bit for our kids, like now it's the holiday season, approaching Christmas, New Year's, and I don't really have any inclination to decorate. Some people, you know, are big into traditions or decorating or doing that special event. And we can do that, but it kind of tended to be more of like a, I've organized Christmas parties before, because honestly, I would much rather be the host and be in charge and have a role in a social setting than to just attend a Christmas party and then have to like make small talk with people and mingle with people. So a friend of mine, an INTJ, and I we just figured out years ago, it was much easier for us to host the young married's Christmas party than to just attend. So, and they were fabulous. We did a really good job. But if you look at my house, it's like, okay, so December 7th, we finally put up a Christmas tree and I did it because I knew my kids would like it. But
if it was just the two of us, we wouldn't have Christmas trees.
You know, before,
we didn't. Yeah.
Before kids. Oh, we strung up white Christmas lights on a potted plant in our house. That was, you know, our attempt at Christmas. Well, now we have kids, though. So I try, but it's hard for me to like do a tradition of something. But I know it means something for our kids. And you can look at other people who like just thrive and like celebrating every single holiday. And that's just not us. And like Kyle said, we're both perceivers. We just kind of go with the flow.
Our kids asked us, our previous house, is this going to be our forever home? And we're like, you know, sweetie, there is no such thing as a forever home for this family, unfortunately. Right? Like, but we take all of these wonderful memories from each house and we're going to integrate it into, we just have to craft our story that way. Because the first one we thought that we, hey, maybe we'll be here for 40 years. No.
Whereas we're looking at buying a house here in the US and, you know, I mean, I haven't heard Caitlin say this out loud, but I've definitely said out loud, like, hopefully we can basically live there forever. Yeah,
so we've said that for every house. And it's been 1, 2, 3, 4.
We just are realistic now. It's like we're not going to be making any promises. And it's and even at some point, maybe we just live on the road or something. That would be kind of like both of us would kind of enjoy a little bit of that. Although as I age, I do have more of a desire to get into my introverted sensing and have these legacy points. And yeah, I need these roots and these tethers to my past. Yeah, some of it's still abstract tethers, and other things it's like, well, I can, thankfully we live in an era where I can still connect to a lot of my friends digitally. And so that's satisfying enough for me, maybe not satisfying enough for some of our children. And hey, you know what? We all have trauma and counseling needed when we become adults. So we're like, well, we may as well at least, what, live authentically and live to the full. And if that means our kids will need some counseling, so be it. Because if we don't do that, if we don't live authentically or live, you know, in a way that reflects our strengths, they'll have even more trauma. I don't know. That's how we're kind of coming to grips with things.
And circling back around to what you were saying, Laura, just for those listening along, you know, I think the challenge of tradition, and you're capable of doing it, but it's not your impulse. It's neither of your central need and central impulse. I mean, I think that's probably really an example of the fact that you only have introverted sensing in one spot in your relationship, and it's Kyle and having it fourth.
Yeah.
And so I think it's actually a really fantastic answer to the question of perpetual problems. It's like not a perpetual problem when you're there without kids.
Right. Because it's not our problem.
Right.
That's right. That's right. But for the kids, it creates this gap.
Well, and the fact is, no, even two people, like, so no one person can be a superhero and meet all the needs. Same goes for two people, right? Like, there is an element, and for both of us, it's tough because our extroverted judging functions are in our back seat, but we still need community as humans, right? Because even two people or one family unit can't really do everything on their own. You need a community to thrive as a group, and it's healthy and right to do that. The one thing I did want to mention, though, because we've been focusing a lot on the differences and on type, one disclaimer that I think is super, super important for relationships is that your type is not the number one indicator of whether you're going to stay together or not. Okay. The absolute number one is shared interests and shared values, shared experiences. Physical attraction is super important too. Those things, even if, again, you share zero cognitive functions, or if you're somehow the same, I haven't actually come across ones that I've verified as being the same, but even in a, you know, kind of a situation like that, that's not all. There is no perfect combination of pure type, because your experiences matter so much, and your and what you want to do in life, like your life path. We found a way to integrate a lot of the things we do, so that actually is helpful, but that's not even necessary to have a successful marriage. But I think stubbornness helps too as an indicator of staying together and have a rich relationship, because you have to go through, it's not just shared good experiences, it's shared bad experiences too. Shared trauma can go a long way. Then you know you have each other's back like that. Yeah, I can remember a whole bunch of really key moments that I'm like, you know what, I need to stick with Laura, not just for my own survival, but because of the love she's shown me through times when I had really nothing to give back, right? And hopefully the same is true for me. Those things we go through when the other person is kind of powerless and helpless and is not bringing anything, and I can still show love in those moments, it's very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. There's no perfect personality match. And on the flip side, there's also no match that's inherently going to be a disaster.
Right, yeah.
All types can work as a couple. I think you hit the nail on the head when they're shared values, when you're heading in the same direction.
So we'll just finish up with one final question to sort of round all this out. What has changed over the years of you being together? And as your life has grown, what's changed for you, both in the ways that you've just structured your life and also in the way that you interact with each other?
Yeah, I think that a massive, massive piece has actually been both of us integrating our auxiliary functions, our co-pilot functions, integrating that into our lives has been huge. So as we have grown individually, that's also made a massive difference for us as a couple. So the case in point for me, both accepting that I have introverted feeling as a co-pilot and that I have this deep vision that is both artistic and emotional and ethical and values based, that now also has grown to include my whole family, so Laura and our kids. It's suddenly brought a lot of stability, I think, to both our relationship and to my life and to the pathway forward. So seeing that develop, and I think that's been true for you too, as especially once you've got into neuro movement, it's massively developed your extroverted sensing, and it's changed the way you interact with the rest of us too.
Yeah, I really do feel when I can access that co-pilot of extroverted sensing and let it be flavored with a tertiary introverted intuition, that I just feel more complete and I'm a more well-rounded person. To be more well-rounded yourself is going to impact your relationship with the people around you. If, you know, if a person's very, I guess, one-sided or like very like kind of stuck in one thought pattern or way of perceiving the world, you know, it influences how you are with others. But I think it's been really interesting after hearing what Kyle said. It made me think of our relationship has improved, and knowing type, as we both held space for the personal growth that we've each gone through, as, you know, as when Kyle was discovering that he had that introverted feeling and what that meant, and it meant a few years of, you know, soul searching and, you know, personal work. And I was willing to let him do that, right? And I could see the importance of it. I think if I had not been willing to let him do that work, A, it would have been detrimental for him because he needed to. But it would have, I don't know where that would have placed our relationship either, right? Allowing your partner to work through personal growth, even though it's messy to do that. People might say like he almost has maybe an easier aspect. It's like he got the benefit of me working on my extroverted sensing and getting my certification in neuromovement. Only benefits him as he can benefit from the work and get lessons and it improves his health. I don't know. But then again, I'm not always an ISTP is not always the easiest person to live with. I will admit that. But yeah, we've been able to let each other work on our own growth and we've both been willing to do it. And I've seen big benefits. Like we just understand each other better now and we can talk about issues and we have language to when those perpetual problems come up or when something new comes up, we have language. And, you know, there's been times where I may just call it out. And instead of being like, Kyle, you're a jerk or I'm angry at you, it's really, I'll call it out really as it is and say, you know what, I'm having a really hard time with your introverted feeling right now. I can't handle it at this moment. We're just going to have to take a break from that or you're going to have to find a different way to work that out. And for me, it's been helpful if there's an issue, instead of thinking that he's the problem. For me, it's been helpful to go, okay, you know what? I'm just having a problem with this function right now because I don't understand it. And so it gives me that way to step back and either try and see that function and understand it or just say, you know what? Maybe we just table this for later once I can think it through and then we can come back and deal with it.
Yeah, but we can identify that this is this one function that is triggering me right now.
Yeah.
It's not you because you're so much more than your type. Right. But it's like this, okay, introverted thinking, maybe we just bring an introverted feeling with our kids right now and introverted thinking, what doesn't matter what's true right now. We're just going to deal with this in an emotional way and just give hugs. Right. One piece of advice that I give to all of my coaching clients, once we've unpacked type, is that it's super important to make sure that you are giving each other space for them to be in their driver function every single day, that you are encouraging each other, even if it really is annoying or hurts, encouraging the other person to get into their co-pilot, into that second function. And again, as Laura said, like for me, that means I'm getting into my emotional experience and impact like it, and it can be selfish and messy, or it can look that way, although it isn't actually that selfish in the big picture. And so that can be super uncomfortable. Or for me, it's like extroverted sensing can be a little bit direct at times and to the point. Like maybe we want nuance. No, time's not now. Like it's not the time for nuance now. It's the time for action. And that can be uncomfortable for me at times too. But okay, we need to encourage that in each other. And like even help push sometimes. And then that third function is really, really key. That third function, it's we need to encourage it when we see it used well and hold back on the criticism when we see it using poorly, because it's going to be used poorly a whole lot. But, you know, the best compliment you can give is something that's based in. So for an ENFP, you want to make their day, say, hey, I noticed that you did that thing really well. You're really competent. That impacted me so much. That's the two of them together, even better, right? Extroverted thinking and introverted feeling. Or for Laura, it's like if she comes up with this pattern, it's like, no, that's a really good pattern. It's easy for my driver. Oh yeah, I've thought of that, you know, before. Oh, that's a simplistic pattern. That's not helpful, right? But it's like, wow, you called it. And thank you so much for anticipating this issue. Oh man, that goes a long way into building up the relationship, right? And then with the baby function, that fourth one, you got to be gentle, right? So it's like, yeah, introverted sensing, I'm just going to miss thing. I'm going to fail to see what's right in front of my face and that's been there for 10 years, right? And for Laura, it's like, I'm not pushing you into a social situation where you have to, or you have to start dealing with our kids' relationship issues. I'm not going to be pushing you into that situation like, here, now go do this all the time, or like, come with me to this meet and greet thing where we're just socializing. So it's just being gentle and aware that's okay. We love the baby and it's super important because it gives us aspirational vision and it gives us these long-term goals. Laura loves to help people, but she's going the long way around, right? And for me, I want a legacy, but I'm not doing that the direct, you know, tangible, ritualistic way. I can't do it. I have to go the long way around using all my other functions. And so being gentle with that baby for each other. So those are the things that we've had to deal with. And so I talked it through with my clients too. And it's just, it's really good advice that can go for anybody once you know your type. So there we go. Hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I agree with what you guys are saying. It's that shared language and being able to depersonalize, to be like, oh, I'm annoyed with your introverted feeling or your introverted thinking right now, and actually taking the personal aspect of it, which, and this is what I do with my clients as well. I'm really trying to get them away from thinking Kyle's a jerk versus Kyle's introverted feeling is annoying me, is blah, 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 blah.
Or actually, Kyle's introverted feeling is putting me into a place where I don't feel competent right now, right? Like, that's often what's going on. It's like, annoying is this surface thing, but it's like, you're now putting me in a space where I'm not super competent and good. You're getting me out of my driver function, and I feel very unstable right now. It's a totally different situation. It's like, that now there's compassion and empathy on both sides, right?
Yeah, opening up curiosity to then look long enough to actually find explanations and solutions to eventually end up at empathy. Because, I mean, that's really how we get to know each other better. We don't prejudge. We foster that empathy.
Yeah.
So this has been really great and really fun. And I'm really glad that Kyle did push you into an awkward social situation, Laura, and you're able to come and join on the podcast. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it really, as it's a perfect way to round it out. I thought type has been a tool for you guys to get to this point, but really the key to a long and successful and thriving relationship has been each of you being on your own growth path, but then also giving space for the other person to grow and allowing space for it wherever that takes you. I think that's a perfect way to sum it up, you know, no matter what our types are, no matter what those little issues are, that space and that understanding goes a long way. So thank you for that. You guys rounded that out perfectly.
Awesome.
Thanks, Kyle and Laura, for that really fun conversation. And thank you, listener. We hope you got a lot out of it. We would love to hear any feedback or your thoughts on this conversation in an Instagram comment or an email, and let us know what personality type matchups you'd like to hear an interview with in the future. And on a final note, we'll be taking a break from putting out new episodes for the month of January, but we'll be re-releasing our series on personality types and relationships that we did a little while back, in case you missed that one. So we'll talk to you again soon. Stay curious.